Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. In her early 20s, Leanne Jacobs seemed to have it all, the perfect job with a great salary, the husband, the house. But on the inside, she felt constant pressure to work longer hours and didn't have the mental space to take care of herself or nurture her marriage. So she took her first step on the path to creating what she would call beautiful money. She's written a book with that title, Beautiful Money, The 4-Week Total Wealth Makeover, where she outlines her wealth creation program, which she believes will help us align our personal values and lifestyle with income and career. Leanne Jacobs has worked in sales and marketing for several Fortune 100 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Nike, DuPont, and L'Oreal. And it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you. So when you look at a wealth makeover, as it were, how do you look at that? And I guess what I'm asking essentially is the definition of how you define wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, so it's not just being rich. It's about your overall profile.
Yeah, I mean, it's really... I like to call it like alignment. It's that feeling of feeling fulfilled and connected and content and peaceful and having inner harmony.
Okay, so for you, and when as you outline it in the book, what is the first step? What do we need to do in that alignment?
So this is the fun part, but it can be a little bit of the scary part, but this is really the area where We take a look at where we are right now and what isn't working. So making space for the beauty we desire is really the first step. And oftentimes we're so busy that we don't even recognize that chaos and clutter has this sneaky way of kind of creeping in our lives little by little. And we usually don't do much about it until it's completely overwhelming. So we're slowing down the pace a little bit and starting to remove not only what isn't working anymore, but what isn't aligned with where we're intending to go over the year and over the next couple of years.
This takes, I would think, some great, and you're right about this, it takes some great soul searching to figure mm-hmm. out to create that focus on clarity of exactly what we want our life to look at. That's a tough thing to come to. We live our life, but to actually ask ourselves that question, well, what do we want it to look like? That takes some digging, doesn't it?
It does. And there's a great quote that says, like, life isn't a rehearsal. So I like to look at, you know, the only thing we have is right now, and the only thing we have is time. And we want to make sure that we're aligned with being on purpose. And oftentimes, you know, when we wake up, for me, it happened a little earlier in life, but I realized that I was sort of living to please other people, and I was living from the passenger seat of my own life. And I got to the point where, you know, I needed a new formula, and I had to take charge and really own my decisions and own where I was, my direction. And it's fear does creep in. But it's a very empowering place to be when you really get conscious on the time is now.
So when does money start to come into the equation of where that becomes the crux of this? Because you're talking about your goals, your lifestyle, your personal life, your obviously your income, your career, your family, your so forth. So at what point does really money become a very essential part of this equation?
I would say from the first word, it really has everything to do with what's behind the money. So typically our habits and our behaviors and our choices, how we do one thing is typically how we do everything. So where there's messes in other areas of our life, typically there's some messiness in our money too. So it's about just having a looking more on what's behind the money and what's behind the I'm just compromising my worth, and I am not asking for more money. You know, if we're not asking for more money, we're typically not asking for help in our lives either. So we're just sort of settling. And so I would say from the very beginning, we're starting to make the space for greater alignment and a greater relationship with our money. And also, we're becoming more excellent and true leaders with our money from the first chapter.
How much of it is on us singularly, and how much of this, when we are in a relationship, when we have a family, does it then have to become groupthink?
Yeah, that's a great one, especially when we're married. You know, if our money pattern is to save, and our partner, spouse, is the opposite, spend, it creates conflict for sure. I would say however, it is always our role to lead in our own lives and to make that choice to change or to step it up a notch or to graduate. And then we worry about the external. But the first step and the most important and powerful step is to have confidence in ourselves and to truly be ready for change and make that commitment. And then, I mean, it's baby steps at a time. but it's definitely our responsibility.
When you think about what our responsibilities are and all of what we have to do at any given time, we can have this plan. We can have, because you use words in the book of redesigning and revising, and so you're doing over a lot, hence makeover. You're doing over a lot of this stuff, but it's almost a constant process, isn't it? Because the external forces are always changing.
100%, and I think that's really one of the secrets to really being aligned with a more holistic approach to wealth is if we can have little ways of cleaning up our messes and a little bit of chaos on a daily basis, we avoid the crisis mode where everything needs to be sort of realigned. So it's not about being perfect, and we're going to have days where we're off kilter. But if we can have, it's almost about reshifting our philosophy to not being somebody who only moves when there's a crisis.
And I think one of the things that struck me in reading the book is that that's how a lot of us, you know, we're reactionary, right? I mean, we work from crisis to crisis because we don't really know what else is. Oh, we're just expecting the next crisis, and then we'll worry about it then.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of that's our society and our upbringing, and we're fear based, and we're sort of like afraid that we don't know what to do with space or peace. We need to fill it with something, and I think that people are almost coming to a conclusion. It's like enough as a community, enough is enough. There's got to be a more healthy approach to creating a lifestyle maybe we love what we do, but there's healthier boundaries we can put on. We don't have to give our entire soul to our job at the expense of the rest of our entire life. We don't have to, you know, make it to our goal, but we've completely neglected our well-being in the process. It doesn't have to be the all or nothing or the extreme approach. It's taking a healthier approach to how do I feel? What do I want? Putting myself first so that I can actually be amazing for other people.
I wrote a word down as I was reading your book, and that is confident. You do have to develop a great confidence, don't you? I mean, to do that and to be ready for things and to understand that you are capable of taking care of whatever is thrown at you, that takes a certain amount of confidence in your skills and in your ability to be able to fulfill what you want to fulfill.
Yes, absolutely. And I think for me, the point it got to was, well, if the way I'm thinking and acting has gotten me here, why don't I try a new way and a more confident way and see what happens? And I realized for me, like, I tended to settle and compromise. I may have had this, like, what I really desired and what I really wanted, but I was like, well, that might not happen, so I'll just take whatever I can get. And that became a pattern. And so getting to that place where it's like, no, this isn't working for me. So why don't I try something else on for size? And what if the opposite is true? What if, you know, I have confidence to say no sometimes and to not always please at the expense of my well-being and see what greater things can come into my life?
Oh, it's really hard to say no, though, isn't it?
It is. And I think sometimes learning some graceful techniques to say no in a kind way or, you know, to really make people understand, like, I would love to do that, but my plate is really full right now. And could we maybe revisit this in a month or in a couple of weeks? Like, for me, it was just a habit to say yes.
Yes. Yeah,
and then
right.
I would be frustrated after. And once I learned some words that I could use, like a little sentence to kind of give myself some distance from the impulse yes, that helped me a lot. I would be like, just even saying, can I get back to you tomorrow, gives you the space to say, do I really want to say yes to this?
Mm. That's interesting. Do you think that that it should be a decision that you think about, or does if your conscience is telling you, no, avoid this, do you need the time? Should you nip it in the bud right then? Or is it okay to take that moment and elongate it a little bit?
I think for a lot of people who aren't addicted to people pleasing and who are very confident to say no when it feels like you should say no instantly is wonderful. For those of us who struggle with that or who have a bit of an addiction to people pleasing, we can't go cold turkey. We tend to need some baby steps to help us to move in that direction. So even giving yourself a little distance by using some words can be helpful because it is an addiction. It's very difficult when you're so used to saying yes and people pleasing all the time to switch that. And in your mind, you're like, why can't I just say no? It's so, like, for some people, I like to surround myself with people who had no problem saying no. I would watch them, and I would be amazed and in awe because they were so confident, and they just trusted that, you know what, there's something better. And I needed to be around them to kind of raise the bar for myself.
We touched on this a moment ago as far as the idea of, you know, you're always refining this and you're always working on this. It's a steady progression. But you do write in the book about this being a 4-week plan. So what can you do in a month to change your life?
So I think it's an overall... there's some things. There's the awareness piece and there's the thinking piece. And so that's kind of the inner landscape part of money. But there's also simple steps that are, it's almost like getting through the chaos and clutter and getting back to simple. And then you realize the money part is actually really easy. It's what's behind the money. Why do I overspend when I know I'm supposed to save?
Right.
You know, what's behind my habits and my patterns. And so in 4 weeks, I would say a good portion of the book is on your inner landscape and becoming really self-aware. And then half of the book is really on implementation, on strategy and action. So I think it's a really nice balance.
Well, the name of the new book is Beautiful Money, the 4-Week Total Wealth Makeover. Leanne Jacobs is the author of the book. You can find out more about the project by going to beautifulmoney.com, beautifulmoney.com, and you can also find information on our website as well. Leanne, thank you very much for joining us. Have a very happy new year and a great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.